Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around St. Albans and from further afield. Coming up later, how the Herts and Middlesex Wildlife Trusts have got together with Jordan Cereals and local farmers to make a real difference for wildlife. But first, with the shortest day rapidly approaching, we're spending more time inside, so the winter is a lovely time to think about brightening up our houses with houseplants. I spoke to local author and houseplant expert Zia Alloway to see if I could get some good tips. Zia, thank you very much indeed for joining me. Now, apart from looking pretty, why are houseplants such a good idea?
Well, they're very beautiful, as you say, and they do help to green up your interiors. If you only have a flat and no access to an outdoor space, they're great for bringing your garden indoors. And even if you do have outside space, they're also lovely to have indoors, have some greenery, especially at this time of year when it's dark and gloomy.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, to be quite honest, there's not much green outside, so it just brings a bit of green inside. And green's quite good for our mental health, isn't it?
It is. The colour green is very relaxing, so that's good. Plants also give off a lot of oxygen, so they make you feel better, you can breathe more easily. And there's also some hard scientific evidence to show that some houseplants also help to reduce the toxins in the air.
Okay, so they actually properly clean up the air and they reduce the effect of those toxins. That's great, isn't it?
It is. There's a few of them do that, not all of them do. So some of the easy plants are actually very good at that. So spider plants, peace lilies, Boston ferns, and mother-in-law's tongues are all really good at that.
And those are so widely available, as you say, probably some of the easier ones as well. Good news then, brilliant. Now, you're saying some of those, you know, easier plants to grow, but some of us really struggle with house plants. Just to help us get it right, let's start with some basics. Watering, how do you make sure you don't go wrong with that?
The best thing to do is not overwater your plants. More plants die because they've got soggy compost, then the roots start to rot in that wet compost, and then you've lost your plant. If you underwater, it's easy to give more. So if you just wait until the top of the compost feels dry and then water, that's quite a good rule of thumb for most houseplants.
So you say feels dry. What was just poking our finger in and just seeing whether it's...
Yep, absolutely. Just poke your finger in. If it feels dry, the first, you know, few millimetres feel dry, give it some water.
Okay, that's quite scientific then, isn't it? The finger test, right?
Easy.
And how about making sure we've got them in the right place? Again, you know, not over radiators. Is that a rule? I mean, sometimes that's the only place with any sunshine is the windowsill above the radiator.
If you want to put it in a hot place over a radiator, you've got to choose a plant that doesn't mind heat and in a dry environment. So if that's the only place you have to put a plant, I would go for cacti or succulents.
Okay, that's good. And how about also, is it true that the houseplant has to be in a sunny place?
Not at all. Some plants like sun, some plants like shade, just like they do outside. So there's a lot of houseplants that come from the tropics, so they are actually growing under the tree canopy in a little bit of shade, sort of dapple shade. And they are ideal for area that's not quite so sunny.
Yeah, because quite a lot of us, I mean, actually our houses are not necessarily sunny, houses quite close together, not getting as much sunshine in the house as perhaps we might do. But houseplants are fine with that then, they don't mind.
Some are.
Okay.
Some are. Right. Choose carefully.
Choose carefully. Now, if we are choosing, can you just give us a few nice houseplants to look out for?
Well, I think some of my favourites as far as the beautiful leaves are Chinese evergreens, which have got decorative leaves, but they're again very easy to look after.
Right.
Spider plants, that old favourite. You can't really go wrong with a spider plant. They're elegant, they're beautiful, and anyone can look after one of those. They also don't mind quite a bit of shade, so you can put them almost anywhere.
Okay, that's a good tip.
Umbrella plants I love as well. They're big, dramatic plants if you want something larger. And if you've got as I said, a sunny windowsill, some beautiful succulents and cacti out there. So that would be a good choice for that area.
Yeah. I mean, there really is quite a big choice, isn't there? You know, sort of size-wise, like you've said, some things that are really big statement plants and then, you know, really run down to some tiny little cactus that looks like a little pebble or something.
Absolutely, yeah, there's something for everyone, really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How about something, if we want something with flowers on? Is there anything good there?
Well, there's some beautiful flowering plants out there. The orchids are fantastic. And if you've never grown plants before, indoor plants before, I would go for a Phalaenopsis, which is the moth orchid. Yeah. They're really gorgeous. They flower for months and months and months. And then once they're finished flowering, if you cut the flowering stem off, they often flower again within a few weeks of that happening. So yeah. They're fantastic. The other ones I really love are Cape primroses, Streptocarpus, which are just beautiful, delicate. And they come in beautiful colours, from rich, deep blues and purples to bright pinks. So again, there's something for everyone in that range.
They do sound nice. You know, and as you say, you really do get bang for your buck with flowers on houseplants. Things like the Phalaenopsis, my word, they really do flower for such a long period of time,
don't
they?
Months and months and months. I've had one flowering for 9 months.
Yes.
And I have to admit that it does get slightly neglected, so maybe that's a trick as well, not to be too too pampering for them.
Really, but not to manage. And they just look stunning as a bunch of flowers, but they last for so much longer, don't they?
They're really good value, actually. Yeah. Really good value, much better value than a bunch of flowers. And of course, more environmentally friendly as well, really, because you're not throwing them away.
Absolutely, that's right indeed. So if we're going to buy houseplants, where's a good place locally? I mean, do you tend to pick up one? You know, it's quite often people go to the supermarket and just grab something on the way through, but where's a good place to buy a houseplant from?
I would always head to Aylett's. They are fantastic there. They've got a huge range. The staff are so knowledgeable. So if you know nothing about houseplants, you go and ask one of their staff. And Kathy is the head of department there. If you ask her, she will point you in the right direction, so you can tell her what your conditions are, what you want, and you'll get the houseplant you want.
That's really good, because, of course, getting the right houseplant for your house and the conditions in it is really the secret to success, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, that's really good advice. Now, you've written a book, haven't you, which will definitely help us to get our houseplants right. Do you just want to tell us what the book's called?
Well, it's called The Practical Houseplant Book, and it's published by the Royal Horticultural Society in Dorling Kindersley. And I co-authored that, actually, with a lady called Fran Bailey.
Yeah, and there's lots of sound advice in there?
There's some fantastic advice. We've got 175 plant profiles, so that's pictures and how to care for all of those plants. And there's also lots of inspiration and some projects you can do and make things. So it's got something for everyone, I think.
Lovely. Do you think this would make a good Christmas gift for somebody getting started with houseplants?
It would be perfect if you've got any plant-loving person, or even somebody who's expressed an interest and knows nothing about plants. It would be a great gift.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much indeed for joining me. And I was talking there to Zia Alloway. Now, just in case you don't know, you'll find Aylett's Nurseries, that home of houseplant expertise, just off the A414 near the London Colney roundabout. And the book that Zia co-authored, The Practical Houseplant Guide, gets great reviews and is available from bookshops right here in St Albans. Now, farmers across Hertfordshire and across the UK are proving that it's possible to help nature recover and to make a profit too. A new report from the Wildlife Trust shows how locally tailor-made farm wildlife plans devised by the Wildlife Trust advisors with each farmer are helping wildlife to recover. Matt Dodds, who's the Planning and Biodiversity Manager from the Herts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust, joined me to explain the work that he's been doing with farmers in Hertfordshire. Matt, thank you for joining me. So you're working with farmers who grow cereals for Jordans, who they make the breakfast cereal and cereal bars. Why are the Wildlife Trust putting so much effort into farmland?
Well, if you think about it, most of our biodiversity occurs on farmland. And it's also where most of the losses to biodiversity have occurred, just as we've got more efficient in terms of growing crops. So it's a really productive partnership with us and with farmers and with Jordans, because we're helping them to put aside areas of their land to make it better for wildlife, and then it means that you're encouraging people to buy a product that is friendly for wildlife.
OK. And are local farmers happy to work with you? I mean, what's in it for them?
Well, they get a premium for growing the Jordan's oats. So the arrangement with Jordan's is that they'll get extra money to forego the fact that they've signed up to this arrangement. But that's not really, that's a bit disingenuous. I mean, most of the farmers, and this is the thing I've learned, most of the farmers that I've having to deal with are actually really into the scheme, and they really want to do, they want to improve their land for wildlife. And the majority of the farmers are actually doing far more than required in terms of the criteria for the scheme than they need to.
So I've
learned an awful lot actually just going around the farmers, just learning from them and seeing what different measures they're putting into place.
Well, that's really good to hear. So how many farmers are involved sort of in Hertfordshire and I suppose nationally as well?
Well, in Hertfordshire we have 9 farmers. And nationally there are 35, I think, 35 to 40.
Okay, so actually Hertfordshire's got a good proportion of those then. And what kind of things are you asking the farmers to do?
It entirely depends on the farm itself. The minimum standard is to put aside 10% of your land for wildlife, to farm 10% of your land for wildlife effectively. And of that, 5% of it has to be pollen and nectar mixes or wild bird seed mixes. So that's the minimum standard. But actually, there's an awful lot more than that. More than that, they can do and do.
So the bird seed mix, that's to feed birds on the farm rather than growing it to sell as bird seed.
That's right. Yeah. So it's all different sorts of bird seed, which is mature at different parts of the year. So it means that there's a constant supply of food for the wild birds. So when, say, for example, farmland birds, they'll typically eat insects when they're brooding their young. But then through the winter, they rely on seeds. And one of the impacts of more intensive farming is that was previously there used to be lots of stubbles in the field where spilt grain would be in the field. Because we're so much more efficient now, there isn't that level of grain. So this is to offset that, and it provides a fantastic resource for them.
Right, I see. So what species in particular are you looking to help? It sounds like there's quite a few birds that might be helpful, what you're saying.
Yeah, birds are the sort of primary focus. We know most about birds, and that's really the reason. So we can chart the declines of the various bird species. And so that tends to be the focus. But also insects like bumblebees and butterflies and what have you will benefit. But in terms of typical species, they're the ones that you associate with arable land. So things like grey partridge, yellowhammers, corn buntings, barn owls that hunt along the margins of the land, and things like hedgehogs and bats. They'll also, everything will benefit, because basically you're providing more food. So you're providing more food for the insects and you're providing more food for the birds, and that then has a knock-on effect to everything.
Yeah, I see. So, I mean, you've said that the farmers have to put aside 10% of their land, so presumably these changes result in quite a reduction in yield for farmers.
They can do any land that you're not farming, obviously, that will impact on how much you can produce. But I think the idea behind the premium from Jordan's is that they pay them for income foregone. A lot of the farmers are also in other sort of countryside stewardship schemes, things like that, and they're also then paid to take the land out of production for other reasons. But they're very clever, so, you know, they'll generally take out bits of land that are difficult to farm anyway. So not every field is a big square. There's often awkward corners or wet bits within the field, so they'll tend to take those out. And actually, those unproductive areas will tend to be, they're often poorer soil, more stressed conditions. So actually, they work out to be better for the wildlife, because wildflowers establish better in those sort of marginal areas.
Yeah, that's a good point there, isn't it? So how long have you been working with the farmers then?
Well, the scheme's relatively new. The Jordan's Farm Partnership started 2016 is when I started writing reports for them. So we're really early days in terms of seeing changes and things. But they have been involved in the previous scheme to this one was called Conservation Grade. And so they're used to doing this. They've been doing it for quite a long while.
Right. So what kind of results have you seen then in the course of this project? Can you actually measure the increase in numbers of birds, for example?
That would be lovely. That's what we'd love to do. But it is difficult, because you need volunteers then to go and monitor these populations. And actually, I've had some good hookups with some volunteer groups like Hart's Bird Club have been recording some of the bird species that have got, but it's too early to see change at the moment. If there is any change, it should occur over several years. So what the surveys that they've done for me, it means that you've then got a baseline, which hopefully you'll be able to measure any changes in the future. I mean, the scheme runs for 5 years, so.
Okay, well, that was going to be my next question. This is what plans for the future? You are taking the scheme forward for the next few years. Will you be adding any more farmers in, do you think?
I've got one more farmer to do next year. Maybe more farmers will come on board. It depends on what happens with Jordan's. But yeah, the idea really is to just continue to provide advice, like an annual monitoring visit and see how they're getting on, see if there's anything they can help. And I also want to share practice between them because, as I said, I've learned so much from the different farmers that it's nice to be able to try and encourage them to do what other farmers are doing and then sort of all learn together, if you like.
Excellent. Matt, we really look forward to hearing how the future years go of this really interesting project.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I was talking there to Matt Dodds from the Hearts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust. Yes, really looking here to hearing more about that great scheme. Not such good news for local wildlife are Hartsmere Borough Council's proposals in their local plan for 4,000 houses in a garden village at Tittenhanger, which would swamp the Tittenhanger lakes that are a crucial home for both local and migrating birds. Now, Rupert Evershed is joining Rob Pearman on Local Life next here on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM to explain the value of these lakes and the threat to them. So do listen in, as this is a really important local wildlife issue. And if you would like to object to the plans, then head for the Hartsmere Borough Council planning portal where you can make your objection heard. Now, you can listen to this and any other editions of Environment Matters on www.radioverulam.com/podcasts. Do follow me on Twitter at @RV_environment. We're on Facebook, of course, look us up there, like our page, and you can drop me a line on amanda@radioverulam.com if you've got a comment about the show or if you've got ideas that you would like us to cover. Always great to hear from you. Now, I'm going to be back at the same time next week, lots more great ideas for greening up your Christmas. Until then, thank you for listening.